the Crusades were based? That's what one video is arguing here. Now, I'll admit it. I've been one of those Christians that just goes, you know, everyone that was participating in the Crusades, we don't know if they, like, were doing it because that's what they were told or because they were being Christians. The Christians shouldn't always be associated with that because we don't know where they were. Well, I was wrong. And as I peeled away at the layers of the Crusades and what actually happened, and I've heard a couple different creators talk about it, guys like Redeem Zoomer, I was shocked to find out some of the history around it. So let's jump into this conversation. Shout out to Pax Tribe. This is a video that just honestly randomly came up in my algorithm. And I was like, man, this is an interesting conversation. All right. The timelines are fascinating. And there's a lot of stuff that's omitted in the way we talk about it. Movies being made, conversations. This is a dark mark on Christianity.
Let's travel back in time to 600 AD, roughly 500 years before the First Crusade. This is a map of the Christian world at that time. All the highlighted areas show where Christianity had spread and become the majority religion. Wait a minute, is that the Middle East and North Africa? Yes, it is. These two areas used to be Christian. People today think of these as Muslim lands, but that was not always the case. Mm. It all began when Christianity spread far and wide after being legalized by Emperor Constantine the Great with the Edict of Milan. This led to the Christianization of both the Western and Eastern Roman Empire. Even as the western part of the empire fell to barbarians, Christianity remained, and most of the barbarians also converted.
Now, it's important to note that Christianity in this context was not spread with the sword. As Constantine legalized Christianity, the part that was problematic was not violent conquest. The part that was problematic was it became trendy. It became cool. And so there was all these pagans getting saved, and it became cool. And it started replacing paganism. So it's important to note that that is not what spread Christianity. And prior to it, Constantine legalizing it, it was already spreading because of how they treated the poor, because of how Christians took care of the downtrodden and unwanted babies and all that kind of stuff.
What happened in the Middle East and North Africa? In the mid-600s, Arab warlords sprang out of the Arabian Peninsula and began conquering everything in their path. They brought with them their own religion, Islam, and unlike European barbarians, they did not convert to Christianity. The Middle East at the time was dominated by two superpowers, the Christian Eastern Roman Empire, or the Byzantine Empire, and the Zoroastrian Sassanid Empire. Unfortunately for them both, they had just fought each other in a gigantic war lasting 25 years and had drained themselves of key resources. Because of this, neither was prepared for the invasions that hit them. The Byzantines lost all of Africa and the Levant, while the Sassanid Empire collapsed completely. The most important loss for the Christian world, though, was the loss of the Holy Land. By 900 AD, Islam had expanded, by conquest, all the way to France and southern Italy. Now, I'm not going to moralize about this. Conquest and wars of expansion have been common all through history, and Islam followed in that same mold. However, Islam did take things a step further with its concept of jihad, or holy war. Muhammad was a conqueror who took slaves, and Islam has sought to emulate his example ever since. As a side note...
Now, this is where the David Woods, Sam Shamoon, this is where they have a point. Because in its origin, you could deny it all you want to, in its origin, Islam was spread by the sword. It was spread through conquest, and folks who didn't convert were forced to pay a specific kind of tax. This is just the facts of history, right? And anyone that comes from this region knows that a lot of that region is infighting within itself, within different sects of Islam, right? They do all sorts of violence to themselves. So this is unequivocally true that there's a different intensity with the way folks from this region of the world maneuver. And if you understand that and you understand the zeitgeist in terms of the Middle East in general, it gives you a broader geopolitical perspective on what's happening in these sorts of regions. And yes, the jizya tax against Christians was a real thing. And that is why we've saw countries like Egypt go from predominantly Christian countries, because School of Alexandria was in Egypt, right? The writer of Mark, who was close to Peter, was in Egypt. These were a huge, huge Christian settlements. Obviously, Constantinople, which is now Turkey, Christians were forced into conversion, right, in these parts of the world, or they had to pay this ridiculous jizya tax.
This is also why slavery has always been common in the Islamic world and continues to be practiced there to this very day. But regardless of the morality of the Islamic
conquest, we're not
going to
talk about that part, though.
They were, nonetheless, invaders who invaded the Christian world. Christians in conquered lands were second-class citizens, and many were taken as slaves. Christian inhabitants had to pay an enormous tax called the dhimmi tax, and their churches were often shut down. Because of Islamic policies, over the centuries, Christianity in the Middle East and North Africa shrunk from a large majority to a tiny minority. But it actually gets even worse. During the days of the Roman Empire, the Mediterranean Sea was a breadbasket of commerce and trade. The Romans had successfully stamped out piracy and created some of the safest waterways in the entire world. Islamic piracy brought all of this to an end. From bases in North Africa and the Middle East, they turned the Mediterranean into an unsafe hellhole. This crashed the European economy and made Europe a miserable place for commerce for almost 400 years. Islam's so-called Golden Age came at Europe and Christianity's expense. This is the true reason that many consider the years 600 AD to 1000 AD a dark age for Europe. It was literally—
interesting, huh?
Wow.
And so it's interesting that they let all this go to hell, but when it started affecting Europe's pockets, all of a sudden we got to go get the Holy Land back.
It's like it's the dark age now.
Right, right. Yeah, it's the dark age now because now we're affecting the bottom line.
Cut off from the entire world and constantly under attack. It was in this hellish environment that Christendom finally started to have enough. The first rumblings for a crusade came in 846 when an Arabic expedition to Sicily sailed up the Tiber River and sacked St. Peter's in Rome. A synod in France called for Christian sovereigns to rally against the enemies of Christ, and the Pope, Leo IV, offered a heavenly reward to those who died fighting the Muslims. But it was around 1000 AD.
Now that's a little sus. Let's just be admitted. The Pope gonna offer you a heavenly reward?
Yeah. For the people that die.
That sounds like
a little jihad vibes.
Yeah, little jihadi vibes.
When things really escalated on multiple fronts. In the West, the Islamic Caliphate of Cordoba in Iberia began expanding north. It conquered, burned, and enslaved its way through multiple Christian cities, including Barcelona and León. It was this expansion campaign that finally provoked the Christian kingdoms to launch the Reconquista to retake Iberia from Islam. But if things looked rough in Western Christendom, they were even worse in the East. In the late 900s, a Central Asian Muslim group called the Seljuk Turks began migrating into Anatolia. In 1064, they completely conquered Armenia and sacked its capital, Ani. The city never recovered from this brutality and remains a ruin to this very day. Almost all of the Armenian population had to migrate southeast to Cilicia, creating an entire new kingdom called Cilician Armenia. In other words, Islam had made the Armenian homeland unlivable. The Turks then turned their expansion into the Byzantine Empire. They began invading western Anatolia in droves. The Byzantines tried to launch counterattacks, but were ultimately defeated at the Battle of Manzikert. After this defeat, Turks began mass migrating into Anatolia, completely altering its demographics. Another region of the Christian world had just become Islamic by force. Here's how historian John J. O'Neill describes the circumstances. These, then, are the major political events which prefigured the First Crusade. Within a span of 35 years, the Turks had seized control of Christian territories larger than the entire region of France, and now they were a real threat to Europe.
Armenia, which is where I'm ethnically Armenian, got the worst end of this stick in terms of what the Armenian kingdom, the influence of Muslims in that region till this day, they tore down an ancient church just this week in Azerbaijan. That's where I'm from. That I came to America as a refugee because of this stuff. So the tension there has been long. There was over 120,000 Christian Armenians that were just displaced from this exact region. Armenia really got the short end of the stick. And geographically, as this part of the world became more and more Muslim, Armenia remained Christian until this day is landlocked basically between Turkey to its west and Azerbaijan to its east, right? And it doesn't have a lot of strategic Western allies like it would hope. So this is a very, very deep conflict that goes back thousands of years. But still, I mean, like right now, you can look it up on Twitter of an Armenian church, ancient Armenian church, getting dismantled in Azerbaijan today as they conquered the Nagorno-Karabakh region and exiled a bunch of Armenians from there, or a bunch of Armenians were displaced. They weren't technically exiled.
Point. The Byzantine Empire realized it was incapable of stopping the Islamic hordes by itself. Emperor Alexius Comnenus made a desperate appeal to the Pope and Western Christendom for aid. This was a major deal, because Eastern and Western Christendom had been in schism for almost 50 years by this point. The Catholic Pope and the Orthodox Patriarchs did not get along, to put it lightly. But the issue had become that serious that they were now willing to cooperate.
Now, this is important. Like, that schism is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Eastern Orthodox and the Catholic Church breaking apart in the year 1050, huge deals with the fact that they, like, figured out a way to, like, ask each other for help, or the East asked the West for help.
Yeah.
Huge deal to come to the end of yourself and be like, hey, it's really bad over here. Could we get some help?
Begun persecuting Christian pilgrims in the Holy Land. Priests like Peter the Hermit, who would become one of the greatest advocates of the Crusades, witnessed this firsthand. This is the geopolitical environment that led to the First Crusade being called. Now, does it seem unreasonable when you get all this other context? This is what Catholic Europeans knew about Islam on the eve of the First Crusade. Muslims were enemies of Christ, they waged wars against non-combatants and enslaved women and children, and they had conquered all of Iberia, Anatolia, and threatened France and Italy. It was important that this all happened at the turn of the first millennia. By this time, the elites of Europe were finally starting to become much wealthier and better educated. They were developing a much stronger grasp of history and world affairs. Europe was safer and more interconnected than any time since the Roman Empire. They were beginning to truly understand just how much damage Islam had done to the Christian world, and how much of a civilizational threat it still represented. All the pieces were now in place for the Crusades to be launched. In 1095, the moment had arrived. Pope Urban II called for the first crusade to retake the Holy Land and drive back Islam. It would be the first of many. An excerpt from Urban's crusade speech reads, "Your brethren who live in the East are in urgent need of your help, and you must hasten to give them the aid which has been promised them. The heathens have killed many, and they have destroyed churches and devastated the Greek Empire. If you permit them to continue with impunity, the faithful of God will be much more widely attacked by them. On this account, I, or rather the Lord, beseech you as Christ's heralds to publish this everywhere, and to persuade all people of whatever rank to carry aid promptly to those Christians. Let therefore hatred depart from among you, let your quarrels end, let war cease, and let all dissensions and controversies slumber."
Wow.
It's important to point out how Pope Urban's speech emphasized not only the defense of Christendom, but also the end of internal wars between Christian kingdoms. The Pope envisioned an international brotherhood of Catholics who fought not each other, but their external threats.
That's what we need in the West. We need a nice crusade to bring all the Pentecostals.
The call for crusade was extremely well received. The news spread through all of Europe like wildfire. Tens of thousands of faithful Catholics all across Europe answered the Pope's call. Lowly peasants, ambitious knights, even kings. French, English, Flemish, German, people from all walks of life and all nationalities were inspired to fight for Christendom. It's not really appreciated how much of an accomplishment that this alone was. It's really something entirely unique in human history. The Catholic Church had created a multinational network that united Europeans of all stripes and ethnicities under a common faith with common goals. So many different Europeans being united by one religion and engaging in a civilization-wide struggle had not happened before and has not happened since. Catholicism achieved what hundreds of other religions and ideologies could not. And perhaps this is why our modern secular system demonizes the Crusades.
One of the most shameful undertakings ever thought of by our species.
Now, did every crusade always go the best?
That was in the intro of the video, we didn't look at it, saying crusades were one of the most shameful undertakings or whatever.
No, of course not. Some crusades were huge successes, like the Reconquista, while others were dismal failures, like the Fourth Crusade. But even the failures are understandable in context. Crusaders were going halfway across the world to fight unfamiliar enemies on their own home turf. The logistics of the Crusades alone were a monumental undertaking. And despite all these challenges, the Christian forces still often came out on top. The First Crusade could really only be qualified as a roaring success. Crusaders defeated almost every Muslim army they encountered and captured Jerusalem. For the first time in hundreds of years, the Holy Land was back under Christian control. The First Crusade also established Crusader states that would remain in the Middle East for another century.
What year was this?
So the Crusades started around the year 1050. So this is 1100. They go for hundreds of years. So this isn't like one or two. There's like a lot, and they go on for a while.
The cross on the breastplate that all the Crusaders had?
Mm-hmm. Kind of fire.
Kind of fire.
Yeah.
It's getting up there with that Orthodox iconography right there.
Yeah. I mean, this is Catholic iconography.
But I know, but I'm saying, like, they're starting to match aesthetic-wise.
Yeah.
Like was the Sixth Crusade. Jerusalem had fallen back into Muslim hands, but they had started to fight each other in a civil war. Emperor Frederick II of the Holy Roman Empire negotiated a peaceful transfer of Jerusalem back into Christian rule. Jerusalem was retaken without a single drop of blood being spilled, a decisive diplomatic victory, even if the Muslims would eventually take it back. As you can tell, during this time period, it was hard for just about anybody to hold on to Jerusalem for long. In the end, the Crusade secured Christendom's western flank and bought its eastern flank another 300 years. It wasn't until the emergence of the Ottoman Empire in the 1300s that Islam once again threatened Europe. But even when that happened, Crusaders once again went out to stop them. The Crusade of Nicopolis and the Crusade of Varna are two big examples of this. While they didn't succeed in stopping the Ottomans, they did show that Christendom was still capable of uniting to fight common threats in the name of God. And in the end, 300 years later in the 1600s, Ottoman power would be broken by what was basically a crusade. The Christian Holy League of Austria, Poland, Venice, and Russia united to defeat the Ottomans and drive them back from Europe. Despite all of this, some people say the Crusades failed. But did they? Europe was Christian when the Crusades were launched, and it's still majority Christian today, 1,000 years later, although it is secularizing due to modernist ideologies. Ironically, it's only after the Pope lost his power to call Crusades that Christianity started to decline in Europe. But when we look back at these events, history shows it's not a shameful chapter of Catholic history, but the total opposite. The Christian world defended itself and spread the faith abroad after hundreds and hundreds of years of abuse. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why the Crusades were awesome indeed.
So he pulled a self-defense argument.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, again,
That's sick.
When you gather context of what led to horrible things happening, all of a sudden everything changes.
Yeah.
Right? It's like teenagers to death in Vista home. Headline. And then you find out teenager was armed with an AK-47 breaking into a home at night.
Two people.
Yeah. Then you go, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That bit of context. But so that's how history is spun by secularist, modern, anti-Christian voices with anti-Christian agendas. And I'm not saying that in a sense of hyperbole. I mean, like, literally the agenda is we don't want Christians in power. Mm. We don't want Christians to influence stuff. And that's the narrative you get. You get these sorts of narratives.
We see, according to the Bible, that prayer is extremely important in terms of us being transformed from the inside out when we get aligned with God's will. For the Christians watching this channel, I want you guys to implement these spiritual disciplines in your day-to-day life. And the only way I've been able to do this consistently is through writing down my prayers in a prayer journal that does a few things. One, it allows me to reflect and come to God humbly and ask Him to move on my behalf. And two, it allows me to document my prayers, which ultimately helped me remember the very things that I was praying for and see the hand of God tangibly in my life when He answers them. So I would urge you, consider writing down your prayers. It could be in a blank notebook. It could even be on your phone. Or you could check out the one I personally designed and used for my own quiet time and spiritual discipline that I think will be a huge blessing. It's the exact structure and system that I've used for years to pray and be more consistent in my spiritual disciplines. You can pick yours up today by clicking the link in the pinned comment below. All right, I'll see you over there. Peace.